Hello. Today, Noreen and I look at the era which still defines Taiwan's relationship with both the USA and the People's Republic of China. Two crises in the 1950s saw the world come close to a major, possibly nuclear, war. But it was in fact trouble on the Korean Peninsula which really made Taiwan become important to the USA, and to remain so ever since.
We're going to be focusing on Taiwan in the 1950s, and we'll be seeing how the tail wagged the dog as little Taiwan, with some help from Mao, sort of bent the US to its own will to an extent in the 1950s. And throughout the Taiwan Strait crises, the two crises that happened, we'll also see China bending the will of the USSR at this time. So we call it, John Lewis Gaddis, his Cold War historian, calls it the tail wagging the dog, the smaller country pulling in the superpower to do what the smaller country wants it to do.
Sort of like kowtowing to the superpower.
Yeah, well, the superpower kowtowing to the smaller power.
Yeah.
Being led along, yeah. I suppose, by the smaller power. So after the Second World War, the USSR was cautious in its support for Chinese communists, and the US had an uneasy relationship with the Chinese nationalists. We often think of it as a black and white kind of, you know, each supports the other one unconditionally, and it wasn't quite like that. America was particularly concerned about the KMT nationalist corruption. President Truman, for example, believed the aid money that America had been sending the nationalists had been largely embezzled by Chiang Kai-shek and his friends. And so there's this mistrust, even apparent during World War II, and America believed that Chiang put the Civil War ahead of fighting the Japanese. And then at the end of World War II, when Truman sent General Marshall to mediate between the nationalists and the communists, Chiang Kai-shek saw this as an American betrayal. You're supposed to be on our side. And the Americans found the KMT less open to negotiation at that point than the CCP. And Truman seriously considered abandoning all support for the nationalists in the late 1940s. So when after the nationalists fled to Formosa, Taiwan, and Chiang Kai-shek asked for US aid to fund an invasion of the mainland from Taiwan, Truman wasn't keen. Truman actually considered establishing diplomatic relations with the Chinese communist government. That might be a good idea, thinking that as early as the early 1950s, 1949. He expected Taiwan to fall to the communists eventually anyway, and he saw no big strategic importance in Taiwan. So America had no intentions of defending it. In fact, on December 30th, 1949, the US administration finally ruled out any military defense of Taiwan. And this was just weeks after Beijing had begun to plan to launch a cross-strait invasion. Beijing knew it would take them a year or so to prepare for that, to build up their air power and their landing craft. So that's the situation as we go into 1950. And then one event in 1950 rocks Russia's relationship with mainland China and would change US policy on Taiwan and East Asia forevermore. Well, just before we get to that, on the 5th of January 1950, Truman said that the US had no predatory designs on China or any other Chinese territory. To quote him, he said, "The United States has no desire to obtain special rights or privileges or to establish military bases on Formosa." That's January 1950. June 1950, North Korea invades South Korea. Taiwan takes on the strategic importance and the sort of front line of the Cold War, which is obviously now heated up as America gets involved. And so the Korean War changes everything. And from that point onwards, there's US military on Taiwan, in the Taiwan Straits. The US moves the 7th Fleet to the Taiwan Strait. And this is the first time there's this big military US presence. And, of course, it's been there. It lasts, you know, for decades. And the naval force is still there. So the US declared that the legal status of Taiwan as now as undetermined. So a few months after saying in January 1950, saying it's nothing to do with us, and really heavily implying the one China concept. Now, a few months later, America's saying, yeah, it's undetermined. And Truman's view now certainly surprised Moscow and Beijing. And the fact that America cared so much about Korea, I mean, maybe that's another story, but that kind of caught China out a bit as well. and Mao considered the U.S. actions in Korea as an act of war. So China intervened to help North Korea. So Chinese troops pour over the border, joining the North Koreans in the autumn of 1950, China's hoping for support from the USSR, and that support never came in any sort of meaningful way. And Mao was hoping the USSR would share their atomic bomb technology. And this becomes really crucial in the Taiwan story. And Mao was hoping Stalin would respond to the US threats at this point in Korea by Russia sharing that technology with China. And this clearly, this kind of way of looking at things rumbles on. And Mao's going to take this mindset onto Taiwan, thinking, well, if Russia sees that America's a threat, then Russia's going to help us more and give us what we want in terms of atomic nuclear weapons.
Okay, Paul, I want to pick your brain on something. So Truman sort of declared that they weren't going to get involved with Taiwan, sort of, at the beginning, like you said, on the 5th of January.
Yeah, 1950.
But then suddenly they changed their tune.
Because in June 1950, North Korea invades South Korea. And America suddenly sees, they just thought Taiwan's a group of islands that's not going to be any use to us. And now it is going to be.
Okay, front line following
the Cold War. It fits with that policy of containment, which was really just forming at this time. So if you go back a year or two before 1950, the idea of America jumping into East Asia to fight the war would have seemed ridiculous. But by now, Truman's got that policy of we're not saying we're going to invade communist China or communist Soviet Union, but we're going to stop communism from spreading. We're going to contain it where it is.
Okay. Excellent. I'm glad I asked that question.
I'm glad you did as well.
Because I was a little confused there, because I knew of America's heavy involvement in East Asia, Vietnam, Taiwan and Korea. Oh, okay. So that was the turning point because of the spread of communism, or they were worried for the spread of communism.
Yeah, and Taiwan becomes this strategic frontline base for America, for intelligence gathering, for reconnaissance, as a military base as well. And when we get towards the end of the Korean War on the 2nd of February 1953, the new US President Eisenhower suggested in his State of the Union that he might use the atomic bomb on China. So, publicly, obviously, because it's the State of the Union, making this threat very clear. This may have been music to Mao's ears. Certainly, Chung Chang and John Halliday, in their biography on Mao, The Unknown Story, they say now that Mao had an excuse to ask Stalin for what he wanted most, nuclear weapons. America's threatening to drop an atomic bomb on China because of China's involvement in the Korean War. So Mao's turning to the Soviet Union and saying, look, you've got a defense treaty with us. You've already promised to sort of protect China, to fight with China. So you're either going to have to be prepared for nuclear war with America, or you give us the tools to fight it. Stalin didn't want to give Mao the bomb, but he faced a bit of a dilemma, as Russia had this mutual defense pact with China. This was still during the Korean War, and it was at this point that Stalin decided to end the Korean War. He made the decision to end the war, but then that very night he suffered a stroke which killed him. And in fact, Chung Chang and Halliday suggest that Mao may well have been a factor in the stroke.
It's so stressed that,
yeah. But anyway, coming back to kind of draw that focus back to Taiwan. So there's an American fear of an attack on the mainland from Taiwan, as well as the other way around. So America feared Taiwan attacking the mainland as much as America feared the mainland attacking Taiwan through this period. And America was trying to pressure Chiang Kai-shek to stop all operations against the mainland, spying, assassination plots, and so on. And Chiang Kai-shek was demanding a mutual defense treaty of his own with the US, like China had one with the USSR. But the US didn't want to be pinned down and totally committed at this time. But Mao would change that. So Mao kind of delivers in the end America into the arms of Chiang Kai-shek in terms of a defense treaty. We'll see how he does that in as we go along here. There was a conference in 1954 in Geneva over Vietnam, trying to stop that, I suppose, descending into the chaos that it ends up going into. As the French pulled out of French Indochina, and Mao felt at this conference that the North Vietnamese and the Chinese were being pushed around, and then he saw the US create the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, which was designed to unite the region against communism. And so there are these sort of background factors provoking Mao and making it clear to him who the enemy is. And it's in that context that we get the first Taiwan Strait crisis, which begins in September 1954, but comes to a climax in January 1955. And that's where Mao decides to test not only US commitment to Taiwan, but also the Soviet Union's commitment to China. So he told Moscow he wanted a war to liberate Taiwan, but his generals told him that that China's military wasn't ready for it. And one major thing that would bring the People's Republic of China's position, would make that their position stronger, would have, again, been nuclear weapons. So if he provoked the US to the brink of nuclear war, the Russians would know that they would have to decide either to fire nuclear weapons to retaliate against the US, quite possibly, or to take the easier option of supplying mainland China with nuclear weapons, just as Mao wanted. So that's why he gives the order to start shelling KMT-held islands just off mainland China. So this is Jinmen and Matsu Islands. Jinmen is just 2 kilometers off the mainland coast, off Fujian province. And so in September 1954, the PLA starts shelling, and I think they send 30,000 shells, all Russian-made, of course, to land on those KMT-held islands. Of course, Mao is also trying to disrupt the US-Taiwan relationship and any plans they have for a defence treaty. And on that side of it, his plan backfired. So he gains something and he kind of loses something out of his actions here. Chiang Kai-shek is using Mao's aggression himself to press the United States to pass this defense treaty. Chiang said to Americans, the psychological effects of losing these islands would be so great that the nationalist regime, we will collapse on Taiwan. You know, the morale will go so down, there'll be a rebellion against us if we don't protect these islands. So in the Taiwan Strait crisis that really climaxed at the end of January 1955, the American Congress passed the Formosa Resolution, which gave the U.S. president the right to, in quoting now, employ the armed forces of the United States to protect Taiwan and related positions and territories in case of attack by China. And a mutual defense treaty based on those principles soon followed. And that's what would dictate American relationship thereafter, certainly through to the 1970s, when there would be some changes. So Eisenhower is now authorized to use American forces to militarily defend the Republic of China, to base those forces in China, like he's based them in South Korea. To base those forces in Taiwan and Taiwan's islands.
Did President Eisenhower's views differ a lot with Truman?
Well, fundamentally, I would say not on this issue. He's following the policy of containment that Truman
laid down January 1955.
Yeah.
Okay.
And having said that, the rhetoric steps up. The confrontation rumbles on through 1955. Eisenhower is perhaps more provocative with his words. He tells a press conference he could see no reason why nuclear weapons should not be used, and this is quoting him, just exactly as you would use a bullet or anything else.
Wow.
So again, it's a public press conference. Obviously, he's saying that for effect. It's a matter of opinion how seriously he meant those words, but he was trying to obviously have an impact on Mao and calming down. The shelling is still going on of these islands.
But that will just aggravate China even more. I can't imagine, say, President Obama saying,
No, of course. But the world was obviously
very different.
I mean, China back then is got this incredible aim of catching up Britain in terms of its economic production, not catching up a superpower. It's not, in other words, China is nowhere near the major power, obviously, that it is today. So it's...
Mind you, I can imagine Trump saying that.
Yes. So. They're from the same parties.
Yeah.
But Khrushchev on the Russian side, he wants to avoid any Russian nuclear confrontation with the US. Khrushchev is it comes across in many ways as the most measured of all the leaders involved here. And then he decides to give Mao what he wants to try and avoid Russia having to risk a nuclear confrontation with America. So slightly indirectly, he gives Mao the training and gives Chinese staff the facilities and the training for China to build their own atomic bomb. At least that he begins that process. And Mao at this point is ecstatic at the prospect of China becoming a nuclear power. Apparently he said to his inner circle, "We must control the earth." And he had a big banquet and a party to celebrate. And he backed down from the shelling of those islands. Now, how much it's because America's threatening him with nuclear attack. America obviously thought that was probably the reason Mao's backed down, and that just encourages American policy along those lines. But certainly, Chung Chang and many other historians would say it was more that Mao's getting what he wants from the Russians. That's why he decided, okay, I've rattled the American cage. That's got Russia to give us what we need, so I can calm things down a bit now.
And since then, it's sort of dictated US and Taiwan relations. They've always enjoyed a positive relationship, and that sort of intensifies the negative relationship between Taiwan and China and the US as well.
Absolutely. From this point on, until the 1950s, it was unknown how far would America go to protect Taiwan, and now,
till this day and age, they're still allies.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing how... Yeah.
So they've either ever since January 1955, they've either had their own American military in and around Taiwan, or in more recent years, they've armed Taiwan to be able to to do that job for itself.
Thank you for this. Well, now I know why Taiwan and America enjoy such a close relationship. I never quite could put my finger to it. I just imagine because US was selling their sort of cheap weapons or secondhand weapons to Taiwan, but I think the relationship started long before.
Yeah, it goes back a long way.
Yeah.
And through this, and Chiang Kai-shek's point of view, he's seeing that his tactics work as well. If he can provoke mainland China into firing a few shells, it does depend on your point of view as to whether how much you blame him for that, but then he knows America's going to come to his aid, and if he can use that as he can feel assured from now onwards of American backing, like, as you say, he gets. Taiwan has sort of advertised its own weakness in order to win that American backing. And Chiang was making aggressive plans against the mainland, and America knew it. Bringing down Mao was Chiang Kai-shek's objective, and he was trying to persuade the US to buy into that aim. He really wanted to involve the US in a war to regain the mainland. So Chiang Kai-shek's kind of aims and
bigger goals are to invade the mainland instead.
Absolutely.
What about the role of Soviet Union then? They sort of sold their stuff to China, and then they sort of disappeared off the scene.
Yeah, they
slowly retreated.
Yeah, they backed off. They helped with the technology to develop making an atomic bomb, but then it's another thing how to deliver that bomb. So they weren't forthcoming at this point with missiles, with submarines, warships. So that's what Mao wants next. And so three years later, in 1958, you get the second Taiwan Strait crisis, which is remarkably similar to the first.
Of course there's a second. If they named a first, there must be a second. Oh, dear. And it involves pretty much the same party, the US, China, Taiwan, and Russia.
Absolutely. And it involves Mao wanting, this time, a delivery system for those nuclear weapons. Most specifically, he's after submarines. He wants nuclear-armed submarines from the Russians, or he wants the Russians to provide the facilities for China to build those submarines for itself.
Did it ever happen? Did they get any nuclear submarines?
Well, Moscow, first of all, is not so keen, but then Mao starts building up his troops in the coastal region near the islands, Jinmen and other islands, which belong to Taiwan. And Mao is building up his troops in a way this time it looks like he's going to go for a full invasion. Yeah, that's what's on the cards here. And again, he wants the US to raise its head enough for the USSR to supply China with nuclear submarines. And the Russians were concerned when Mao said that the war with the Americans... war with the Americans may not be such a bad thing. China could lure the Americans in and the Soviet Union could hit them, in Mao's words, with everything you've got. And so the mainland recommenced shelling Jinmen and other KMT-held islands, and the US responded by moving a large fleet into the area and by preparing for war with the People's Republic, again threatening to bomb mainland China. America's sent warships. It's also installs 8-inch howitzer guns on Jinmen Island. This is 2 kilometres from mainland China. Those guns were capable of firing atomic shells at mainland China. So, yeah, it's a game of nuclear brinkmanship. We often talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis as close to nuclear war, World War III.
This is...
not a million miles away.
Yeah.
Mao, behind Khrushchev's back, of course, is saying Khrushchev doesn't know what he's talking about. He wants to improve relations with the United States. Good. We'll congratulate him with our guns. Our cannon shells have been in storage for so long they've become useless. So why don't we just use them for a celebration? Let's get the United States involved too. Maybe we can get the United States to drop an atom bomb on Fujian. Maybe 10 or 20 million people will be killed. Chiang Kai-shek wants the United States to use the bomb against us. Let them use it. Let's see what Khrushchev says then. And Mao wrote to Khrushchev stating, for our ultimate victory, for the total eradication of the imperialists, we, and of course he meant the Chinese people who had not been consulted, we are willing to endure the first US nuclear strike. All it is, he wrote, is a big pile of people dying. Ah, incredible.
Yeah.
Khrushchev then, at that point, relented, to answer your question earlier, and he went along with Mao's requests for more help in developing nuclear arms, including nuclear-armed submarines. And from the next day after Khrushchev gave that green light, the People's Republic suspended the shelling of Jinmen and renounced its claim, then thereafter renounced the mainland's claim to those islands. They later symbolically resumed shelling Jinmen every other day until another January, 1979. And of course, this is the time of the re-establishment, the normalization of relations between the United States and the People's Republic of China. And that's when the shelling stopped. And that's obviously several years after Mao's death as well. So it wasn't purely a Mao thing. Mao had said of the offshore islands that they keep Eisenhower and Khrushchev dancing, scurrying this way and that. Don't you see how wonderful they are? And so just like Korea in the early 1950s and Vietnam later, the Taiwan Strait crises, the two crises in the 1950s, showed the limits of the power plays of the actual superpowers. You know, the USSR was taken to places it didn't want to go in, supplying these nuclear weapons to a potentially unreliable ally from their point of view. And America didn't have any interest in Taiwan, but they're drawn into it.
Yeah, just following the enactment of the Formosa Resolution, how did the negotiation between China and the US sort of begin, and how did that sort of stop the ultimate bombing? Because China was really into getting more military powers, say, from Russia and whatnot.
Yeah.
But how did the US and China sort of come together?
Well, I'd say at the time of the crises in the 1950s, they didn't really come together. The USSR supplied China with what it wanted in terms of those nuclear weapons, and so China stopped shelling. The USSR pulled back China away from its provocation of America, so therefore America, you know, stepped back and didn't, you know, start putting nuclear weapons on Jinmen. Prepared to set up the guns that could have fired them.
So it was USSR that sort of pulled back, that made America pull back, that sort of...
The USSR made China pull back,
and that
made America pull back.
Oh, okay, so they didn't really come together
Not until the 1970s.
Oh, okay.
Is something we can talk about another time. I think it's a story in itself, the détente, the three great enemies, of course, well, there's more than three, but the three great powers who were enemies in the Cold War, the US against the USSR, and of course China, and the fact that two of those three on opposite sides come together, so from being enemies to being at least friendly and normalizing relationships through the 1970s, kind of has an effect on the rest of the Cold War, because it's saying these two enemies, communists and capitalists, can come together and the Cold War can kind of end or at least calm down an awful lot.
Okay. Well, Paul, once again, thank you so much for such a wonderful lecture and also very informative. I'm glad I got to the bottom of the US, US and Taiwan beginnings.
Thank you for listening. For links on today's topics, plus free chapters from my novel, visit paulletters.com, where you'll also find my daily updates for On This Day in World War II and lots more free content.